So I'm substituting for Dr. Mehra. He'll be back. So I'll try to do my best. So please forgive me if I goof up. So as Dr. Mehra has already mentioned, we are doing this text, Bhakti Sudha, which is the fourth in the series of texts by Pujya Guruji Swami Tejamandanji. The first one being the Mana Shodhanam, which is to help our mind come to a quietude state, get to some level of peace, so that our mind is available to learn. The second text, again, we have studied together, the Gyanasara. So when the mind is quiet, peaceful, it's available to learn the knowledge. If the mind is racing, if the mind is agitated, the knowledge is not going to sink in. And when we have the knowledge, then we can abide in the knowledge by meditation. That's the third text, the Dhyana Swarupa. And once we abide in the knowledge, once we have the inner awakening of our own true self, then there's a surge of emotions, a surge of devotion inside us towards the Supreme Lord. And that supreme surge, that surge of devotion towards the Supreme Self is Bhakti Sudha, which is the fourth text that we are doing. I think Dr. Mehra has completed up to fourth text, so let's chant the third and the fourth verse together. Then we'll start our discussion. So you can, that is page number 5. Punya rupotra vai dharmas kama swarga prapakaha Kshayat punyasya tannasta tasma nechanti tam buddhaha Verse number 4. Mana shuddhi karo dharma nishkamo yoga sadhakaha Artha kama vubhau loke kevalau bhogadayako Just doing a quick recap of the first few verses that we have studied so far. In the verse number 1, the teacher is talking about the Supreme Lord being all-pervasive and being friend to each one of us. We all say the God, Supreme Lord, is everywhere. He's present everywhere. And unlike our so-called friends, unlike our relations, unlike our acquaintances that can be friendly to us, that may not be, friendly to us, depending on the situations arising. But unlike all of that, the Supreme Lord is always kind to us. He's always generous to us. He's always giving to us. We always go and look up to Him whenever we need to. Whenever we need something, we always run to Him in the form of a prayer. We go to our church and pray, Lord, please do this for me. Please give me this. Please give me back my health. I have back pain. I have this. I have that. And He is always willing to give that to us. So in the verse number 1, the teacher is talking about that. And in the verse number 2, the four main self-efforts that a human being puts forward, the dharma, the goodness, the earth, the desire or the happiness, the kama, pleasures, and mukti, moksha, the freedom. So he's describing these four main efforts which are there, which are put forward by a human being. And in number three and number four, the teacher is elaborating on those four self-efforts: the security, the happiness, the goodness, and then the fourth one, which we'll study today in the fifth verse, is the freedom. So we all seek happiness, security, goodness, and freedom in our own way. We all want security. When we move to a city, we are looking for a conducive household, neighborhood, which is free from crime, which has a gated community, has a guard, patrol. We are looking for that. We are looking for a good school district for our children, physical security. Politicians, Bollywood stars, they have bodyguards. They walk with weapons. Physical again. Some of us go to the gym, pumping up iron, have a 48-inch chest, 12-inch bicep. So, okay, come what may, I can deal with that. Whatever happens, I'm physically strong. We seek strength in money, security in money, as much as we can get. Our bank balance goes up higher and higher. Our stocks, bonds. So we seek happiness in that, comfort in that. Then once we get that, we want to derive happiness out of that. We want to be happy. But then how is happiness going to get tied with the security? I have accumulated a lot of wealth, but then I don't want to spend it. If I spend it, my heart cringes. I've earned the money with so much effort. How can I let it go? I'm not going to let it go. So we sit on that. We spend the money, then we are insecure that it's going to all go. So then we have a problem with that. The goodness, the dharma. We all want to be good. We are all good in our own sense. We donate money, charity, foundations, homeless people we help, people in need help. We donate for the churches, hospitals, different organizations, all good. Then we get a ticklish feeling in our heart. I did good. I'm a good man. God is going to reward me for that. So then we have done that goodness effort with our identification to our body, mind, and intellect. So that goodness act that we have done is going to help us get some merits, which may take us to a higher world, like heaven. We all want to go to heaven, have a good life. And as we have often discussed here, it's like spending a credit card in Hawaii. We spend all of our good deeds that we have accumulated, which are going to run out as our credit card is going to run out whenever we go to any vacation. And once that runs out, we are pushed back here. So to what good effect is that goodness that is going to push us back here? Some wise men do these acts of goodness with no desire for themselves. They have given up the sense of body, mind, and intellect. They do not see themselves as an individual. And that act is going to lead that wise man towards freedom, mukti, moksha, liberation. And then the fourth one, we'll talk about that. So, as we discussed, we are all seeking this in our own way. It's an act of goodness that we are sitting here right now. No other better way that we could spend our Thursday evening here than here, coming here. We could have gone to a restaurant, maybe a few drinks, chat with our friends, eat good food, go home. Happiness, pleasure, comforts. When I was in residency, lack of money. So getting a first car is a big deal. Then getting married, having children, buying a house. Okay. As time passes, We want to earn more and more money. Get a bigger car, expensive car, bigger house. Children grow up. They get married. They move out of the house. Now I'm looking for a smaller house. Or maybe I want a smaller car. Then I call up my friend Jesse that I need a place in your cemetery because I'll be dying soon. To what effect? I've started from here, my residency, gotten a car, married, house, bigger car, children move out, smaller house, downsizing they call it, right? And then down to the grave. So what different did I do? It's all the same. Nothing different. Where's the freedom in all this? So when we align all these things together, the goodness part, the happiness part, the security part, with the desire of freedom, that's when we come to the stage of being a spiritual seeker. That's when we want to get out of the cycle that we are all in. And that is when we need to align all these four self-efforts in one line. Doing all these acts of happiness or security with the right means, the dharma, towards freedom is what the teacher wants to talk here. So let's now read our main verse, verse number 5 on page number 9. Muktir vai mochanam vidhi jara marana samsrute vilakshana hi bhaktistu shuddha prema rasatmika. So muktir vai mochanam, freedom, mochanam, getting out. Jara marana samsrute, jara, life, marana, death, jara is old age, marana, death, samsrute, the change of life called the world. Getting freedom, getting released from the cycle of birth, age, disease and death, liberation from death. Now, how does that happen? Nobody wants to die. None of us wants to die. No living form wants destruction. Even an ant, when the ant is moving, we place a hand, the ant is going to find a way around it. A cockroach will find a way around it. As an animal, if pushed to a corner, for self-defense, to live, the animal is going to strike at us. All living beings, including plants, they find some way to grow up. They will go around that obstacle. We all have seen plenty of examples of all this. And we are human beings with greater intellect. We don't want to die. We don't want to get old. We'll get plastic surgery, dye our hairs, get hair transplant, devise new means of prolonging our life, frozen up. But eventually it is going to go. Eventually we are going to die. So how does freedom happen? How do we get out of this? And then the second line he is saying, Vilakshana, amazing, unique is Vilakshana. Bhaktastu Shuddhi Prem Rasatmika is that devotion to the Supreme Self is totally amazing and unique, is the second line. Love can be for our children, family, relations, but the love that we have for the Supreme Self is pure, devoid of any attachment, any expectations, is a pure love for the Supreme Self, full of devotion. How does the devotion, or so-called us as devotees, get that? Let's touch on this aspect of this devotion, being a devotee and being a seeker, a spiritual seeker. Let's dwell on this a little bit. See, a seeker, a spiritual seeker in our journey, sadhana is the practice of a spiritual seeker. So when we break this word up, it's a Sanskrit word, sadhana. Sadh means to achieve. Sadhak is a spiritual seeker. Sadhan is the means. Sadhana is the practice. So the means acquired by a spiritual seeker to achieve sadhya, what you want to achieve, the Supreme Self, that practice is called sadhana. Now, there are two aspects involved in sadhana. One is the practice aspect, the action-oriented. Getting up early in the morning, taking a bath, going to our prayer room, doing our prayers, offering our prayer, sitting in front, incense sticks, light up a candle, chant our prayer, few verses. This is action-oriented. We do all of that. And we are doing that with our speech, with our physical body. Then we have to think about some prayer that we all do that. And we all, most of us do all that. So that's the practice-oriented spiritual practice. But that is time-bound. We cannot do that all the time. We have to go to our work. We have to do what we do. So how does this last longer? Second aspect of the sadhana or the spiritual practice is attitude. So the first is practice-oriented or action-oriented. Second one is the attitude-oriented, which has no time bound. It can be made permanent. So when we are doing our prayer in the form of physical activity by washing the idol or, you know, offering the flowers or lighting up the candle, that's the physical aspect. Speech aspect is we are saying something. And then there is a mental aspect. Do we really mean what we are saying? Are we saying that from our heart? Or we are in a hurry to leave because I'm getting late for my office. Maybe the traffic I'm going to find is going to be pretty bad. So I need to go in a hurry. So I'm going to just do it mechanically. I'm going to go out of the house. So I don't bring, most of the time, I'm not bringing in my mental aspect, the attitude aspect in my act of the spiritual practice. So I'm missing out on that. But when I dwell on that more and more, when I do that meditation, maybe for a few minutes to start with, few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Do that for some time. Few days, few weeks, months. Do that for the whole year. That is when the teaching that we get from our scriptures is going to stay with us for a longer period of time. That is when we are going to develop that attitude of devotion and surrender to the Supreme Self. So as a spiritual seeker, I have to be always alert. Whatever I am doing, it has to be surrendered to the service of the Supreme Lord. I am doing it for Him and Him only. This is for Him, for Him. I offer everything to Him. This is the time that as a spiritual seeker, I'm going to transact with the world the way I'm doing right now. I'm going to go to my work. I'm going to behave with my family the way I'm doing. I'm going to act the way I'm doing in my office. I'm going to do my work. No difference in that. But I'm going to have that vision in my own knowledge that as a seeker, I have to constantly abide in this knowledge, with a sense of surrender to the Lord, that this all belongs to Him and I'm doing this for him. So in a stricter sense, when we say the guideline of a sadhana is to have a vision of oneness with all, with the attitude of surrender to the God. So we see with action, things keep on changing. We can light up few things, we can offer, we may do some acts, we may go around or go to a pilgrimage, do different stuff. That will always keep changing, but the attitude has to stay the same. And the longer the attitude is going to last for a few minutes, maybe an hour, longer time, we go to our work, after a period of time, that sense and that attitude is going to last during our work hours also. So I'm going to see the people that I interact with in my work with a sense of oneness. It is very hard. We cannot even get beyond the first step. So to have a sense, once we go out, things are so busy, we get caught up in that. The more transaction we have, the harder it is. The more people we interact with, different things, different problems, it is harder to get that feeling of oneness. That tells us that it's harder, we have to work. We have to work even harder. Otherwise, we'll be all here. I was talking to a friend of mine. I asked him, he gave me all the right answers. But then I said, why didn't you? He said, I don't have time. We all say, we don't have the time. How are we going to have the time? Time for what? If I am a seeker, this is what I am. I have to be alert all the time. That's when all my activities are oriented and generated towards staying in my own knowledge, towards a devotion to the Supreme Self. Even sleep, when I do that. Even the sleeping I'm going to do with the sadhana. I'm not going to stay late someplace because I have to get up early in the morning. Because I have to do my practice. Then I have to meditate. So I'm doing that with the attitude. So once we develop and maintain that attitude, all the activities become a part of the sadhana. Because I'm going to alert. I'm not going to let the thing slip from me. And this is very hard. But while we are transacting with the world, we have to behave normal. We cannot act differently. Otherwise, people are going to look at us, okay, well, what does this person think? What does this guy think of himself? There's something wrong. He has an attitude or something or the other. So we have to act normal in the worldly transactions. But abide and have this vision down inside of devotion in our own self and stay in that knowledge. That's why they say all these things should not be discussed at coffee table, cocktail tables, having dinner, having a discussion with, you know, wherever. Intellectual learning and logical argumentation should be avoided at public places. Otherwise, it's going to bring a lot of confrontation and agitation in the seeker's mind. Because then you want to enforce your views. You want to tell everybody, no, it's like this. It's like this. This is the way it should be. This is the way it should be. And then people are going to have arguments. It is very clearly said by our scriptures and our teachers that these things should be avoided outside. You do these things with like-minded people at a congenial place, at the proper place. Talk with your teacher. Interact with your teacher. Interact with your people that you study with. Have a proper satsang. That's what they say. Otherwise, it will be very, very agitated. The person is going to be very agitated, trying to tell upon the world, no, this is the way it is. That's the way it is. It will create a lot of problems. So in the initial stages, when we start learning all these things, we are all full of excitement. Okay, I've studied this. I know this. This is the way it is. But we need to avoid that. We need to curtail our excitement back. Otherwise, we are going to have more agitation rather than calm and peace in our mind. So with this guideline of sadhana, having this vision of oneness, then we have to see, all of this is in our hand, doing the practice, having a right attitude, then there are things that are going to fall in place themselves, which we have no control on, but it's going to happen. Like we are eating food, the act of eating is in our control, but the act of digestion that goes inside our stomach and intestines is beyond our control. That is going to happen, regardless. So, doing this practice is in our hand. The result of this practice is beyond us. And that is when we need to remain equipoised, have a sense of equanimity, indifference to whatever the result may be. Because if we have attachment to that result, we have brought in an element of ego that we have fallen from the path. So having a sense of equanimity, indifference, and detachment from the result is when it's going to help reach our path towards perfection. It's very hard. I mean, we have to do it 24. I mean, that's why Anilji has mentioned so many times, some people asking Gurudev, how many minutes, how many hours should I do meditation? He said, of course, 24 hours, because it is not a practice that we do of meditation, that we sit at a quiet place and close our eyes and, you know, do our mantra and, you know, replay that knowledge. It has to be done all the time. The attitude has to be maintained all the time. People say, okay, well, should I meditate in the morning and then should I meditate in the evening also? Well, if we have those questions, then we still haven't gotten that knowledge yet. So the preparatory means are doing our worship, our prayers, doing our chanting of the mantras, going to pilgrimages, serving saints, serving teachers. These are all preparatory means to calm our mind. So once we have done that, then we come to the next stage of acquiring the knowledge, which is done by three aspects: shravanam, listening, mananam, reflecting, questioning that knowledge, dwelling on that, and then nididhyasanam, or the meditation aspect, abiding in that knowledge. So this is a direct means. First is the preparatory means, which is the quietening of the mind, peaceful activities, make the mind available to grasp the knowledge. And once the mind is quiet, then we approach our scriptures, our teachers, we listen, we read, then we reflect, question it. And if the seeker is advanced enough, then doing these two means is done. But we still have that ignorance, we still have some garbage that needs to be cleaned from inside us, then we can meditate to abide in that nature. Open for discussion, comments, questions.
Okay, you meditate,
the teachings. The teachings we are supposed to, well, again, depending on how far we understand, how far we grasp the knowledge.
So you go over it.
You basically replay that teaching when you are meditating, and we'll try to do that when we meditate right now. So by doing that, it's going to remove all the doubts during the meditation. And then ultimately, eventually, we'll know that there is nothing to meditate, because there's just one self. And then later on, we forget even that the sense of self is not there. That is the state of perfection.
So this is not a prayer.
Meditation, see again, different forms of meditation are there. People do meditate on sound. People do meditation on light. People do meditation on form. People do meditation on mantras or chanting of, you know, something that you do that over and over again. This meditation that we are discussing is the Vedantic meditation, is when we constantly replay the teaching in our mind, what is my true nature? Once I know that my true nature, that is when it's going to help me get to the tranquil nature of my own true self. The inner awakening, that who I am. Again, all of, see, meditation itself is a fad. You know, people are really infatuated. People are really attracted towards, okay, meditation. We are going for a meditation class. Meditate on what? Who is meditating? For what? For what purpose? Byproducts of meditation are quietude on the mind, reducing the blood pressure, reducing the stress, reducing the anxiety, feeling good and calm about it, calm about ourselves, being able to tackle situations in a better way. These are not the goals of meditation. These are just byproducts of meditation. So if we are getting all these, which is good, going to happen, but then this is not the goal of meditation. So if we do not have a clear knowledge of what are we meditating on, who's the one who's meditating, and for what purpose, we can sit down, close our eyes, and then we can dwell on our breath, dwell on the light or the form of our Lord. It's going to help the mind calm down, get single-pointed, concentrate, focus, then eventually you will feel peace. This is going to happen anyway in the initial stages. But as we, again, stay on our journey, we get the knowledge from the scriptures that what is it that I'm meditating on, and who's the one who's actually meditating, and for what. Then as we climb the ladder, things become clearer. But this initial thing is going to happen. That's the way we have to start. We cannot just start right up there. We have to start from the bottom. We have to start with simple means. Pranayam. People do pranayam. Breath control. Postures. All of these things are good. They will help focus the mind and help it settle down, make it quiet, making it ready for the ultimate. So prayer is again a preparatory means, helps to calm down the mind. We go to a temple and church. We feel good when we go to a church because we feel quiet. Our mind has quietened down. Our mind is not worried about stuff. It has come and settled with the Lord, the form of the Lord up there. And we forget the outside hassle, the outside worries that we have. So if you feel good and happy and at peace about it, that's why we feel good, at peace. And that's why we go there more and more. But then this is the initial step. My college friend came to our house. He's a physician too. He said, Pankaj, I'm a doctor. I do work with my work with total faith. I'm a good person. You know, try to be good as much. Good, do good stuff. Do good things. Do some, donation, charity here and there. My children are good. I'll live a straight life. Lead a straight life. My wife is, fine. We are going to our church. We try to stay away from, bad vices, stuff like that. What else do we want? This is good. This is enough. people may find happiness in that, and that's fine. That's totally good. At least that is there. At least that part is there. But then to get out of this cycle, jara maran samsrate, the freedom. How's the freedom going to come? As long as I have this idea and identification that I am the body and the mind and the intellect, and I'm a good human being, I'll always be in this cycle of birth and death. I may be a good person, but I'm not going to get liberated. To have this freedom and the liberation, we have to come and advance in our journey and go to the next step in our journey, which is going to a teacher, getting to the scripture, listening to the scripture, learning the scripture, then reflecting on that. So this is all part of the journey that we have to move on. We cannot just get stuck at one level. We have to make an effort. That's what our purusharth is. That's what our effort is. I think we mentioned it one time. Gurudev himself said, wherever we end up, where I am right now is my destiny. How I get there is my self-effort. So through my self-effort, I can change it. So I have to put some effort in my journey. I have to progress. We should try to climb up, not climb down. I hope it answers. I hope it says. It's going to be a huge topic. Liberation in these terms is free from the cycle of birth and death and not getting reborn again. That is liberation. So once I give up the sense that I'm not the body and not the mind, I'm not the intellect, and then I have given up my interaction with the world, and I'm not a perceiver, feeler, and a thinker anymore. When I have that, then I'm able to dissolve and exhaust my vasanas. And that's when I move up towards my own nature. And that's when I realize that this is it. There's only the self which is there. There was never any life anyway. I'm all. I'm the one. And that is the last stage of realizing that I'm always liberated anyway. But attached to this flesh, body, all these things that I see in this world, as long as I have that, I'm always going to be bound. I may have a lot of knowledge of physics, chemistry, biology. I may be a hugely, highly intellectual person. But I'm always going to be a miserable mortal. To not be a miserable person, to realize that I was always immortal, is liberation. This is all worldly knowledge that we have, but intellectual knowledge. But we don't want that. We want to be able to abide in it. Move one step beyond the intellect. So when we transcend the intellect is when we move higher towards the Om, the Supreme Self. That's what they say, transcending the body, mind, and the intellect. We all are a bundle of our vasanas, which are latent impressions deeply hidden in our personality. And some subtle expression of this vasana coming to the level of the intellect becomes a desire. When we have a desire, it brings a thought. With the thought, our body acts. So this huge load of vasana that I have this huge load of vasanas, the collective vasanas that I have, is my causal body, which is in combination with the subtle body, and the gross body is me. Whatever vasanas I have, it has found its combination of subtle body and the gross body, and this has made a personality me. We are all a combination of whatever individual vasanas we have. That's what we are. And to get out of that vasana, to get rid of that vasana by detachment, by renunciation, by constant practice of the knowledge, is going to bring the freedom. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But then again, all of this is in the realm of the body, mind, and intellect. So what we are saying is where intellect cannot reach, we have to move on beyond that.